hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads. Where bandits are catacombs and giant doors. Protect the chest and store some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's horse. A grand theft of Elder Scrolls. Simon's quest with Toe and Earl. Rocket shoes to Everclue. Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash your crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. Head on over to Spotify. Give us some spins while you're lounging. Twitch.tv/controlissuespod. We put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure over there. Blue Sky, Control Issues Pod. Find us over there. Last but not least, drop us a line. Let us know how you're feeling, how you're doing. controlissuespod@gmail.com. AMC, how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. Don't really have much to say today. Just we got back-to-back. Was it back-to-back-to-back weeks? But yeah, I just enjoying life right now. Washed both cars today. I thought it was going to Saturday. It looked like it was going to rain. Marissa was like, it might thunderstorm. So I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to wash the cars today. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't rain where I was at. I did hear that it rained in some areas, but no rain here in LA, at least where I was at in LA. So Sunday, woke up, motivated, got out there, washed the cars, got them nice and clean so that they can look all good for the back to school trips. And the school drop-offs, which is most important, because you don't want the other parents judging you as you drop off your kid. but it was nice. I washed the cars. Naomi always likes to come out when I wash the cars and then take over the hose and do her thing. But she also likes spraying the car, so it's a good bonding situation. But yeah, not much going on. Watching My Hero Academia, still pushing through that, enjoying that, and Crunchyroll still kicking ass, and AEW wrestling always handling business and pretty off of WWE right now. But I'm waiting until something gets interesting there before I'll jump back in. But AEW is kind of where I'm getting my wrestling from these days, and got in my workout, so no complaints here. Just doing the damn thing, regular maintenance, and enjoying life. How about yourself, A-Dub? How you been?
Very similar, my good man. Making sure I'm getting my workouts in. I've been taking off Fridays at work, so I've been doubling up on the boxing. I'm getting that. Got my back-to-back weeks going on that. Just trying to stay consistent. You know, been seeing some progress, so want to start to step things up a little bit. You know, get more of my other routines into the whole exercise mix. That way I can start to see, like, I want to get an idea of what's the minimum amount I have to do to get where I want to be. Because back when I lost a bunch of weight the first time, I think I was just doing too much work for what I was trying to do. And it kind of drained me over time, even though I was able to do that for like a solid like year and a half, 2 years. But yeah, I'm just trying to pace myself and just figure out what my tolerance is. That way I can have a better life balance where I'm able to give stuff exactly the amount of time it needs and, you know, spread myself more effectively. Went to the nursery today, so I was running a little late for the pre-show, but I, you know, every year or so I take my plants to the nursery, get them repotted, ask questions, learn how to do stuff. Eventually I'm going to start potting and repotting my own plants. But yeah, just, you know, stand them up a little straighter, make them a little more presentable. So yeah, just maintenance on that level. Entertainment wise, anime is kicking ass. You already know that. Sakamoto Days is back on Netflix, and the stakes are getting higher and higher with each episode. I believe there's another show about Oni called Togen Aki that's on Togen Aki or Togen Anki. So that's on Netflix as well. Of course, I'm staying current with Rise of the Shield Hero. Kaiju number 8 continues to put just bigger and bigger elements onto the table. So highly recommend that for people. You know, just counting the days until the final season of My Hero Academia. But outside of the anime space, I forgot to mention last week, but I've been watching Alien Earth, and I am thoroughly impressed with that show. I mean, it's got an excellent cast of actors. It's doing amazing things with all like the elements and circumstances that have been set up with the Alien franchise, happening with like humans versus synths versus hybrids and all this kind of stuff. So it's not just aliens, there's also corporate shenanigans and chicanery in the background that's going on, and you want to pay attention to that. But yeah, the big thing for me is that I love this run of content we've been getting where it's of older source material, and what the creators are doing is they're able to use like the lenses and special effects to capture the texture and the lighting of that old style presentation while it being modern and like more polished and more detailed. So it fits right in to the whole pantheon of content that we're used to. So yeah, Alien Earth, that's excellent. You know, just the comedy news shows, they're taking breaks and taking gaps. So it's kind of hard to stay current with that. But anime and series, those are keeping me afloat. Other than that, just trying to endure this oppressive heat that we've been dealing with. I mean, I can't go out the house without just self-basting, glistening everywhere I go. I absolutely hate it, waiting until nightfall and whatever. I'll be glad when fall rolls around. I'll be glad when that first rainfall finally hits the ground. So just keeping my window cracked, both ACs on. And paying for it, Southern California Edison.
Oh yeah. Well, how's that gaming life been, A-Dub?
Gaming life's been pretty sweet, AMC. You know, Death Stranding 2, I'm still pushing that ahead. I went back to the Mexico area, five-starred everybody, ended up getting like weapons and equipment that I didn't have for my experience with the first like 60% of the game and connecting half of Australia. But like now I got a big bore handgun, I got a level 2 assault rifle, I've got they're called the absolute boot. So you have the transporter boots, which are good for just like trekking and getting stuff from one place to another. You have trekking boots, which are good for going over rough terrain. You have combat boots, which are good for, you know, delivering devastating kicks to enemies. You have your stealth boots, which are good for sneaking around. But then you get the absolute boot, which takes like all of those factors and puts them together in one boot. This thing has claws and all kinds of like attachment points and stuff. It's an insane thing. So I got the absolute boot. I got like upgraded skeletons and, you know, setting up my monorail system that's starting to go around the mountain that's in the middle of the map. And also setting up my zip line system so I can quickly deliver packages, get my Legend of Legends of Legends ranks. And yeah, man, just enjoying the hell out of that. However, the game that really caught my attention, you know, I played Wuchang up until the point that it got the controversial patch, which censored some elements of the game, and not the elements you'd think they'd censor. They censor your ability to be able to kill historical figures and like, hey, different country. I'm not going to put my values and things onto the situation, but I have been less interested in going back in the game. So I've been looking for other Souls-likes that have a similar feel and fluidity of motion to Wuchang. And one that someone recommended to me was Lords of the Fallen, which I purchased a while ago because it got that 2.0 update. Like a lot of the systems and things got overhauled, the assets and visuals and performance improved. So, you know, I just had it on ice. I was going to check it out one of these days. I've heard good things about it and started playing it, and it immediately has like a similar feel and pace that Wuchang has. It's actually a bit more fluid. I feel more in control of my character and what's happening on the screen at any given time while playing this game. So, you know, I'm getting into it. I'm enjoying it. I think I'm going to put more hours into it. I love what they're doing with kind of that dual world system where you have your lantern and wherever you shine it, you get to see like the dead world as it is. And then if you press a button, you get to transition into the dead world. And, you know, sometimes there'll be, you know, places you can't go or things you can't access in the living world. But in the dead world, if you like shine the lantern, maybe a gate has a hole in it. And as long as you're shining the lantern, you can walk through that hole. Or if you go into the dead world, you can, you know, traverse and interact with the things that are there that you can't otherwise do so by just holding the lamp. But the longer you spend in the dead world, the more the dead, like their awareness of you increases. So they start sending increasingly tougher enemies at you. And it's a balance. It's a bit of a give and take. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to digging further into it. I'm starting to get, you know, more equipment, more weapons and things that are helping me more easily deal with the challenges that await. So, you know, I'm just going to stick with it, keep pushing it and have a good time with it. But that's about that. You know, we got some Overwatch last night. We had Trues, we had AFC, we had a single, and sure enough, once we got the band together, the winds just started falling like fresh rain. It was absolutely phenomenal. We even had, there's something that happens when you get all the homies together. It's like we're just chopping it up, shooting the shit the whole time, but we are absolutely murdering this team. It's like there's no effort, there's no exertion. It's just like, hey, how you been? How you got the kids now? How old are they doing? Like, oh, elimination. So yeah, man, that's the good time that I've come to appreciate whenever I get Platinum Plus on the scene. But AMC, what have you been playing?
Couple games, been playing Zelda. Not gonna really talk about that much there. Just pushing forward, unlocking stuff, exploring. It's having a great time. I had like one dope battle where it's so I go into this cave and I'm like, all right, let's see what's going on with this cave. I find a shrine in it, but it's across a pit. So I'm like, all right, let me cross this pit to get to the shrine. And next thing you know, like you see these like shadow hands like pop up, and it's like, and it's more of like, you feel like this isn't a regular fight. This is kind of like a mini boss fight. So I'm like, oh, hell no. I climb out of the pit and the hands start coming towards me. But I notice they're not climbing out of the pit where I'm at. So I'm like, all right, let's just rain thunder down on these hands. And so I start throwing bombs at them. I take them out. And then the hands die. It's like six hands that are protruding out of the ground. And they die. And then a shadow Ganon, like, you know, Ganon, the main boss from most of the Zelda games, is like a shadow version of a Ganon warrior. I don't know. I didn't read the full description of it. But a shadow Ganon pops up. And he wants to do battle now. And he immediately destroys me. But I'm like, all right, well, all right, let me just do this shrine. So I restart, come back. I just run across the pit and I climb up the other side and get to the shrine before the hands can get to me, knowing that they can't climb out of the pit. Do the shrine is pretty easy. Like, it wasn't even like I didn't have to do any puzzle solving for the shrine. It's literally just get to the shrine and then we'll give you the upgrade from the shrine, which is like this light orb. And so I do that and I'm like, but I want to try to beat this Ganon guy. And so I'm like, all right, I save after I do the shrine. And then I re-engage in the battle. The hands come up, take him out. I already know what to do there, drop the bombs on him. And then the Ganon comes out. And first I try to fight him. And I'm noticing like, okay, I can block a couple of his attacks. But he gets off like two shots and I'm donezo. But what I do notice is that he hits me and I have 9 hearts right now. As you get those light orbs, if you get 4, you then go pray at the statue and she can grant you a bonus, and it's either more increase your maximum health or an increase to your maximum stamina. I said, nah, whatever. Anyways, and then so I've been choosing hearts and so our health, and so I do that. And anyways, come back to the battle. Every time he hits me, I have only a quarter of a heart left, so I can only handle one shot. But what I did notice is that if he hits me, I have enough time to heal every time. And so I'm like, all right, so as long as he doesn't kill me, I can heal myself. But he would get off like these attacks, and it would be like 1-2, and I'd be done. Eventually, I fight him enough times, and I get to the point where I take him out. And then I noticed that I can basically climb into the pit and he'll teleport down, and while he's teleporting down, then I can climb out of the pit, and then I can like get off a couple shots with my bombs. So I'm like, all right, I'm clearly like underpowered to fight him, but I have the tools that I feel that can take him out. It's just gonna be a prolonged battle as opposed to if I were to come back later. So I'm raining these bombs on him as I'm like going through this like motion of drop the bombs. Then he starts teleporting out of the pit to get me, jump into the pit. And then when he sees that I'm in a pit, wait for him to come down in the pit, go out of the pit, and then I start dropping bombs on him. So I do that. I go through all 30 of my bombs, and that leaves him with a quarter of health. And I'm like, all right, at this point, I should be able to now take him hand-to-hand because he's going to fuck me up. But I've got a quarter of health. I might just have enough in me to take him down. And so what was happening was that before, when I was first fighting him, I was blocking his attacks with my shield. What would end up happening is I noticed that there was a surrounding puddle of gloom around him. And mm-hmm. if I stand close to him long enough, it starts deteriorating my maximum health, which is important Ooh. Because if I lose one heart of maximum health, then he can kill me with one shot. And that's what I noticed. That's why he was able to beat me without me able to just like spam healing every time I took a shot. And then mm-hmm. so when I was fighting him with that quarter health left that he has, I wasn't blocking. And what was happening is he would just hit me with his sword and it would send me flying across the pit. But what was key to that was I wasn't standing in front of him long enough to take on the gloom effect. So what I was doing was I would run up, hit him two times, and then not block, let him hit me. He would knock me across the pit, take health, get maximum health, run back at him, take two shots, let him hit me again and knock me across the pit. And so it felt like one of those things like an anime where it's like, he's getting fucked up. He's like, nah, he's getting more shots. he's actually the one doing more damage. and so like, it was like, yeah, like it was just one of those things. I was like, oh, okay. If I take advantage of this, and if I take advantage of the fact that he's going to hit me across the thing, then I'm not going to take the gloom damage, which will then allow me to survive the fight. And so I did that and I took him down, and it was the most accomplished I had felt like in a while, like a video game, like in a mini boss fight. Genius
strategy, dude.
Yeah. Yes.
The feeling of figuring out like, oh, if I just neutralize this part of your offense, you're actually quite beatable.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, in a way where it's like, I got to just take the hit, but I know that I can survive the hit. And that's like, and that was everything. So yeah, it was awesome. It was just like, I was like having like that Shigaraki like self-regenerating, like it's like, oh, he's just I'm throwing my best attacks at him and he just keeps healing. But then you notice like, well, yeah, season 7 spoiler, but then they notice like in that one battle, like, but like, we notice that he's taking on some of the damage that we're sending at him, like
oh, yeah, he's healing slower now.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's like one of those things, like you just felt like one of those anime, like one person, it's the non-knowing person watching a fight, and then the knowing person is like, yeah, actually what you don't see is like this is all part of his strategy. And so yeah, it was awesome. Like in a way, like, even reminds me of, what was it, Deku, when he had the girl on his back and she was just rejuvenating him as he was yep. using the All For One.
Like, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was awesome. Outside of that, playing Dave the Diver, Marissa and I, we finally really got into the Ichiban Holiday Yakuza Like a Dragon crossover DLC. It's awesome. It's just a straight-up, like, brawler at this point. Like you go into, so we do a dive and there's like these poachers, I guess, and or pirates, like sea pirates. You run into them like throughout the regular game, but they show back up in the DLC, but you're Ichiban. And so they're talking that shit. And it's like, oh, I'm about to handle this business. And with the previous version of Dave the Diver, the base game, when you fight them, you're using your harpoon or like your guns. But since it's Ichiban, everything's melee. Like you're swimming at them underwater and then you're trying to combo them up and then they swim away from you and you're trying to catch up to them and you dodge their bullets and then you get off your melee attack. And then we get to the one point where, so we played through that and we get to this another phase of the I guess the campaign where it's a straight up like brawler. Like Marissa, as she's playing, she's like, this reminds me of the Ninja Turtles arcade game. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly like it, except without the co-op. And you're playing as Ichiban and the other homie, I forgot his fucking name, but he's like one of the main side characters.
Kiryu.
No, he's one of the main side characters in the Dave the Diver game, like the base game. I just can't. Oh, Cobra is his name. Okay. He's like this. Is this guy? He's like an ex like mercenary. He has an eye patch, and like he's the one who like helps you get all your equipment. But yeah, he's part of the beat 'em up. So it's you and Ichiban, and you can switch between the two characters if you hit L1. Go back and forth, and you're just playing this like straight up like brawler section of the game where you fight your way, you get to the boss fight. Like there's minions, you fuck them up. They do that bullshit where like they can walk off the screen and stuff like that. Like it's great. It's definitely like an homage to like those old school Final Fight, like whatever style brawlers that like we played on the SNES and NES. And we got through that. Haven't beat it yet because now we have to push forward to now we got to do some shit with Boncho where we gotta make a, was it soba? They're like, oh, like I noticed that you don't make these cold noodles. That's like really what I want. And Boncho's like, oh, you saying I can't make cold noodles? And so now I have to go and get the ingredients, and then he's gonna have that cook off. So a little bit of everything that you love from Dave the Diver mixed in with some of the retro style like beat 'em ups that you would enjoy from the past. Like it's a good like just fun. Like I say, romp, but just a good fun like crossover with Yakuza, and you see like the cameos, like as you said, was it Kiryu? You see like some of the characters from Like a Dragon show up and be nutty and interact with the Day of the Diver game characters, and it's just a fun, good time. I highly recommend it. I think I got it for like $3. I think it's like $7 if you pay full price. Totally worth it, I would say. Just enjoying it. And there's other DLC that are not DLC, I guess, other added content that I had noticed that we had missed out on. They did crossovers with three other games. I can't remember them, but yeah, it was fun. Like we're playing through that right now. Like one's like this pop star shows up and she wants you to help make something for her, and so we got to do that whole thing. But yeah, just fun, good time playing Dave the Diver, Zelda, and yeah, with you, Overwatch, hopping on with you and E-Single, with True's in the mix, really focusing on Lucio these days and really feeling it. Like it's happening, it's going, yes, down, it is. And I'm really enjoying Lucio, and I'm putting my time in with him because let's see, like by the time you hear this, a day later, Wu Yang should be out, I think on the 26th with the season 18 I believe update for Overwatch, and so that's gonna be nuts. We were talking about like the perks that they're changing up in our text thread, our Overwatch text thread. So there's a lot of changes coming that I'm excited to like see how those change like some of the builds that I might have done with characters, and maybe possibly making other characters even more viable than they were before based on the changes that they made to the perk system. So I'm really enjoying what Overwatch has to offer these days, and yeah, it's finding a way to stay relevant amidst all this greatness of just offerings. And so yeah, I am in video game heaven, A-Dub, and let's take a quick break because we will break everybody off with these GameCom announcements, because it was delicious, it was great, and I like to discuss more of that. So let's take a break and we'll come back with our first topic of the week.
Topic of the week.
All right, we're back. A-Dub, you got something for us before we get into this GameCom?
Yes, I do, AFC. We got our second mailbag coming at you. Our man Greg N returns. He's sending us a message entitled In Defense of Destiny 2. Says, hey, Control Issues. Heard your discussion in that last episode about the Sony takeover of Bungie due to disappointing Destiny 2 performance and problems finishing Marathon. Just wanted to say that I think Destiny 2 is underappreciated and that some of the criticisms of Bungie's work on that title specifically are overly harsh. I came back to Destiny 2 around 2022. After I realized that the game offers a deep build crafting experience, not unlike Diablo. It has been my daily driver since then, and I now have over 3,000 hours played. As someone who obviously likes the game a lot, I do believe Bungie has continued to put out a high quality product that just doesn't have mass appeal anymore. I'm no game industry expert, so I don't know why it's not pulling in the numbers it used to, but my thought is that the game has become increasingly difficult and less new player friendly with each expansion. Admittedly, there is also a lot of repetitive grinding for loot that can get boring fast. More variety, particularly with new enemy types, would have been great. It's really too bad because the most recent expansion, Edge of Fate, has a very good campaign about 10 hours in length that is worth experiencing. Bungie has also continued to excel with the design of their combat encounters. I don't think there's really anything else quite like it. If you're interested in seeing what build crafting is like now in Destiny 2, check out the links below to a couple of content creators who do a good job coming up with builds and explaining them. Thanks and love the podcast, Greg.
Yeah, great. Oh, breaking it down. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
And with the experience under his belt.
Oh, 3,000 hours. You can't question the man's heart.
That's insane. That's like every expansion.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, the game's been around long enough. Like, but yeah, I mean, there's plenty of opportunity for people to fall off. And clearly, it's kept Greg's interest this entire time. Do you want to lead off with your response?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same position as Greg, where I feel like, you know, Destiny has always just been that punching bag where it's people just never have anything positive to say about it, but they play it every day. So <Yeah. laughs> it's like ever since the original Destiny, like ever since the original Halo, Bungie has had me hooked with just their rock solid first person shooter mechanics and just their. I enjoy their original and so far flung of a vision of science fiction. Like they have excellent designs. They have excellent ideas. You know, of course they're having scandals with their artwork and things like that. So, you know, I have to acknowledge that, but at the same token, what they do put out and what people can't question is theirs or not, as always, kept me on the hook. Kept me going. Like Destiny 2, it just visually, the settings and the locations you would go through, it's like Destiny felt to me like a higher quality, higher class Fallout. I mean, not Fallout, Borderlands, I should say. Where it's like it felt like a prestige version of Borderlands. And it's
Borderlands 4, taking some notes from Destiny, even.
Oh man. I don't even want to fathom how that could possibly take shape. But yeah, man, Destiny 2, it definitely deserves the developers who have been making and supporting this franchise for all this time. They definitely deserve their flowers and their respect because, I mean, you don't find rock solid gameplay experiences like that of Destiny 2 just willy-nilly in the bargain bin. And like, oh, I wonder what this is. Oh, it's the greatest thing ever. Like, no, that doesn't happen all the time. So Destiny 2, like, they've been holding it down. They've been setting the tone, like, for all the ill that has come Bungie's way because of their leadership. Like, it's only so massive and on such a scale because of the work those developers did to draw all those eyes, all that attention, all those resources, like all that success into the company. So yeah, I'm with Greg on this. They deserve more love for the things that they do right and the things that they excel at. AMC, how about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, totally agreeing with the fact that when you have something with this type of longevity, there's only so much you can say about that it does wrong. Like, I think about the one that we talk about all the time is Overwatch. Like, people constantly shit on Overwatch, but it's also a game that's been out since 2016. We still play it. We still enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I still hear people every now and then talk about playing Overwatch, even though they will never give it any type of credit. So I totally relate to that sentiment. And it's one great to hear that consumer opinion, because it is one thing to hear, like, people who are in the know and they eventually develop kind of like a hive mind, like, way of thinking about things. And so it's like, oh, people don't like Destiny, then we talk about how Destiny has a problem. But then there's people clearly playing the game, and it's like, it can't be all wrong. I would say the only, like, criticisms I've heard is mainly with the PvE. Like, I discussed with my coworker, and he was saying, he's like, oh man, I was a top whatever in PvE, and then we felt like we were left behind. And I think I maybe heard on, like, either heard or read that maybe some of that had to do with the fact that they had to make Marathon, and so some of the focus on PvE went over to Marathon and PvE, PvP. I should have been saying PvP.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But yeah, so he was saying, yeah, I was like a top whatever in PvP. And so I had heard that, like, some of the some of the team that worked on PvP was moved, shifted over to Marathon. And so maybe that's why there was a drop off in care and concern in that portion of the game. And we see in PvE has still gotten expansions like from time to time. And yeah, so it makes total sense that, you know, that people have had issues, but the issues seem to be somewhat, I guess, like confined to certain areas of the game. And if you focus on those area of the game, then you might be upset. But if you just enjoy, as Greg was saying, like looting, finding loot, doing your builds and all that type of stuff, then you're enjoying the PvE aspect of the game. And so that's something to always keep in mind, especially like when there's a new raid, everybody's all over that to the point where people are cheating on the raids. And so it's like clearly something that still engages with people. The last thing I would say is the idea of when that Greg threw out that it might just be at a point where there's so much lore has been added into the game that it might be daunting for somebody to be onboarded that knows barely anything about Destiny at this point. I mean, that does
lore, mechanics, content, locations, systems that have just been added over all these years.
Like, exactly.
I fell off. I have no desire to try to catch up with where modern Destiny is right now.
Yeah, and so that kind of like leads some idea to the, or maybe the possibility that there might be a demand to not relaunch it, but to put out a Destiny 3, a jumping on point for a new audience. That was like one of the criticisms with Destiny 2, I remember, is like, you see, Destiny 1 was published by Activision, Bungie developed it, and there's a lot of criticism with Destiny at the very beginning with like the whole shaders and all that stuff.
And then
I think it's because like you can only use the shader once. If you replaced it, then you got to refine that shader. It was kind of annoying.
I wasn't terribly fond of that.
Yeah, and so there are all these things that people felt like, oh, this is Activision's hands all over it. And then when they launched Destiny 2, I remember at the time people felt like, oh, this is just a cash grab that they're doing Destiny 2. And so it was somewhat applauded when Destiny 2 went free to play, because it's like, oh, we're not doing these, give us another $60 for another basically Destiny 3 game. But as Greg is pointing out, with enough expansions, you think of like World of Warcraft, where it gets to a point where even like you see that and it's like, man, I don't know what the hell is going on in World of Warcraft. Like, as I was watching the trailer during Gamescom, like, I have no idea what's going on with World of Warcraft these days. And now we're at midnight. I'm sure the story has just evolved to a place where you would need to go back and read like tomes to understand what's going on in World of Warcraft. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, like the idea of, I know people didn't like the cadence that Destiny was launching with Destiny 2, with Destiny 1, but maybe we're at a point now where we could see, especially based off how Marathon launches, if that game doesn't really hit, Bungie possibly revisiting Destiny and doing a Destiny 3 just to give a point to, for new players to jump on. And so, yeah, I hear that, and I definitely echo that sentiment. So I love that Greg wrote in and broke it down, because at least we have a knowledgeable person of the current situation of Destiny and how there's still fun to be had there. And it's not just a ghost town, a graveyard has been left left behind to barely be supported. So yeah, I'm glad that we got that update and that the boots on the ground, if you will.
Especially with the last expansion they put out, Edge of Fate.
Hell yeah. But hey, Dub, you want to get to this topic of the week?
Topic of the week. We'll just go right into it because it dominated the entire week. We got Gamescom opening night live. It went down, and we're here to tell you all about it. In typical fashion, we're going to focus more on the things that personally interested us rather than running you down with the whole show. But
there's there's so much.
So I'm gonna just lead off with the big one right off the top. We finally got it. We did it, everybody. All the patience, all the suppressing of the anger and the murderous thoughts has finally paid off, because we have not only seen once again Hollow Knight Silksong take the stage, but we've got a release date, everybody. It's not just confirmed for 2025. It's going to be hidden September 4th. 4th.
4th.
Yes. So, in within what, a week of Chronos the New Dawn, Hell Is Us, and Borderlands 4, we will also have Hollow Knight Silk Songs, Our Wallets Weep in Agony, and we will stress over how we will find the time to fit all these great games in, but all will fall into the shadow of Silk Song. AMC, are you going to be there with me when Silk Song launches?
Man, I still haven't played the first Hollow Knight, so I will not be there with you. I know. As I was watching that gameplay, I was like, holy shit, how have I not played this game? So I won't be there day one, unfortunately, but the game looks absolutely awesome. It's pushed me to the point where I own Hollow Knight. I just haven't gotten to it, and I might just need to push something aside eventually and just break it out. The anticipation for Silk Song is so high that, and it doesn't seem like it's unjustified at all. Like, people are like, we love it, we just want it out. Even when they see it, there's none of this I'm questioning my enjoyment for my excitement for this game. Like, no, but people are like, no, this game is going to hit, and it's going to hit hard, and it's just a matter of time. We just need the date. Give us the date. And now we have the date. So yeah, it's a stacked fall. It's kind of it works out that GTA did not hit this year, because this fall lineup is just the games on top of games, man. Like, I feel like I say this every year, but this year just even more ridiculous with what we have just coming out back to back to back to back. And there's a little bit of something for everybody. I've seen articles like indie games are now getting out of the way for Silk Song now that the date's been announced. It's one of those ones. It's not GTA, but in that genre, in that space, it's like GTA. So yes. Yeah, it's crazy. How about yourself, A-Dub? How are you figuring out your September when it comes to all these games?
Well, AMC, I gotta remind you and everybody at home that A-Dub has two copies of Hollow Knight, because I got it digitally, and when I completed it, I was so thoroughly impressed with the experience that I had, that I got a physical collector's edition copy that I'll just keep it in the closet, keep it on ice, because I have a feeling that the value might be something I can smile about in a few years' time. However, Hollow Knight, Silk Song, Team Cherry, the last time we heard from them officially, they let us know that every time they want to come forward and let us know what's going on, the game just keeps getting bigger. They keep adding more to it. I mean, Silk Song is supposed to be much larger than the original Hollow Knight. More enemies, more bosses. And when you see the gameplay, like, just the love and attention to detail and all that time that silence has paid off, it makes September very crowded. As I just told you guys, like, Hell Is Us, Chronos the New Dawn, Borderlands 4, and that's just the stuff that I'm personally, like, these are things that I must have in my library, like, sooner rather than later. And Hollow Knight Silk Song just makes a big crater in the first week of September. I'm probably going to end up getting both Silk Song and Hell Is Us, and I might have to juggle both of them. I'm absolutely fast-tracking my playthrough of Death Stranding 2, so I'm going to try to move through the remainder of the story within the next week or two. And, I'll try to stream, let you guys know what's up, twitch.tv/controlissuespod. But yeah, Hollow Knight Silk Song hitting on the 4th is a massive monkey wrench in my plan. I was only planning for Hell Is Us and Borderlands 4. My brother got me all into Chronos the New Dawn when I was trying to ignore it. Now I have the must play that is Silk Song. So, it's going to be some interesting what are you playings once we get through the first week of September. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a great problem to have. But AMC, what have you seen that caught your eye in Opening Night Live?
This is, as I said, a Ghost of Yote, I am not necessarily there day one. We shall see, because there's just so much happening right now. And also, I'm like knee deep in Switch, and I got to get to this Donkey Kong, and who knows where I'll be after that. But there was an update to Ghost of Yote, A-Dub. We've been seeing that beauty. But, I'll just go right to the IGN write-up. So let's see. Ghost of Yote offers a new glimpse into its beautiful world and a tease of the return of Legends in 2026. So Ghost of Yote is set to be released on October 2nd, but ONL, Opening Night Live new. There's still time to stoke your anticipation for the Sucker Punch sequel, as it offered a look at the ridiculously good-looking landscapes and battlegrounds of the sequel of Ghost of Tsushima. Snow, meadows, fire, mist, it all looks stunning no matter the weather. However, perhaps the biggest news out of this section was Ghost of Yote will be getting its own Legends multiplayer mode in 2026. So that was the only thing that really was important to me when it came to Ghost of Yote. There have been a lot of discussions about Legends being this popular multiplayer addition to Ghost of Tsushima. It wasn't tacked on multiplayer. It was additive multiplayer from people's perspective. Yeah. And so there was a lot of excitement there, to the point where it became like you could buy it separate from the game if you didn't buy Ghost of Tsushima. And so, and it was it had its own feel to it, because I believe there was like magic, and it was a little more mystical or fantastical, if you will, as opposed to the more grounded feel of Ghost of Tsushima. We were wondering, like, so we had this successful multiplayer PlayStation, they have this live service initiative, so you would think there would be a multiplayer for Ghost of Yote, but they hadn't been talking about it. But obviously, you got to give it some time. They want to focus on aspects of the game, not all the game. And they don't want to just show up. There's this thing with, like, if you show up day one with your roadmap, that kind of turns off people at times. And so, yeah, they wanted
it's
to just focus.
So, like, counterproductive. Yeah. It is just like they're telling you. Isn't that what people wanted? Transparency, be upfront.
Support.
Let us know what things are, when we're going to get it.
Yeah, they want to know if their game is going to be supported. Like, the moment a game isn't supported, they call it a dead game. And yeah, they're letting you know, hey, we got like years of support coming. It's like, oh, okay.
You could have put this all on the disc.
Going back to Destiny and Greg, like, I remember when Destiny was first announced, and they're like, oh, this is the game I'm going to be playing for my entire lifetime. What lofty goals Bungie has. And next thing you know, Greg is playing 3,000 hours of Destiny. Yeah. So it seems like those goals may have been met by Bungie.
And 3,000 hours, which is like a third of a year.
Yeah. And so, yeah, what's it called? People really enjoyed Legends for Ghost of Tsushima, and they were wondering if they're going to bring it back with Yote. And so now you can put that to silence. You know that's coming. We also know that's going to be coming like a staggered from the launch, because it'll be out next year as opposed to this year. So, A-Dub, one, how do you feel about the announce of Legends with Yote? Two, did you mess with Legends on Tsushima? And three, are you upset that it's not there at launch, or do you like the fact that they delayed it?
All right, I'm going to try my best to remember all three of these questions. Let me get to the easy ones. So I'm a fan of staggered launches in this fashion, because it gives people ample time to have to run the single player campaign through its paces and to understand the mechanics, get their head around it, so that when that multiplayer mode runs around, there's a lot fewer questions. There's onboarding's a lot easier, since that's in the vein that we're in. I'm looking forward to the mythical aspect of Japanese history being revisited again. I think it's awesome that they're doing this a second time. So Ghost of Tsushima really has set a standard for this franchise. Your man Knees used to play this a lot. I think Grimes may have got down. I know my brother got down. So, you know, now, because I didn't play the original one, so now with this one coming out, knowing that it's a solid experience and knowing people that will be playing it that I can get with, that, you know, I'm comfortable playing games with, I'm looking forward to getting into this one when it does eventually release, because I will have certainly completed this game well before then. So let me see, you wanted to know if I'm okay with the staggered release. Totally am.
All right, hype levels for Yote Legends, and did you play Ghost of Tsushima Legends?
Did not play the original. It came out, I heard good things about it, but, you know, just being online, being multiplayer, I wasn't as much in that space back then as I am now, you know, having Helldivers, Overwatch 2, having those in my rotation constantly. Like, now I'm a bit more open to, oh, okay, let's try this one out. Let's see if this one can get in the rotation, and, you know, just adding new things. So yeah, that's about where I stand.
Cool. Well, you know what? Let's take a break, A-Dub, and we'll continue with our discussion of Opening Night Live.
Of the week.
Live week. All right, A-Dub, what else caught your eye
Yes,
at opening that live?
yes, yes, y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah, next one that caught my eye at opening night live is probably one that didn't catch your eye. No. This one, Deus Ex Machina Titanic Scion. So this game was revealed, I believe it's coming out relatively soon. I believe it's coming out probably the second week of September, but I'll have to check my wish list again. Deus Ex Machina, the original game, was on Switch, so I didn't get a chance to play it. And the draw for this franchise for me is that it's developed by people who used to work at From Software, people who used to work on the Armored Core franchise, specifically around the time of Armored Core 4. And that's kind of the direction that they continue to explore with the Deus Ex Machina franchise, where it goes more toward the higher speed, more anime style combat that, you know, Armored Core 4 kind of set one foot into while remaining a bit realistic. Like, what really caught my eye and put Titanic Scion on my radar is that, you know, when you play mech games, AMC, you've seen how they do it. You spend all this time putting together just this amazing machine that you look forward to taking out into the world and just destroying everything in your path with. But you get out there and your mech just sticks those two arms out, and those two arms stay there the whole time, and you're sliding and you're jumping and you're moving back. You might get some additional animations with your melee, with your laser sword, with your metal piles, with your shields and such. But by and large, it's a bit more mechanical than you want in your mech games, or at least that I want in my mech games, because I was raised on mech anime. So I'm used to articulation. I'm used to scenario circumstances. I'm used to taking a knee when both the arms get blown off, but still having the secret weapon, you know, that kind of stuff. So when I'm looking at Deus Ex Machina Titanic Scion, you know, I'm seeing the mechs in different kinds of poses, different kinds of angles. I'm seeing different kinds of scenarios that are more than just, you know, boost and shoot. Like, it's showing me the kind of variety and originality that I'm looking for in the space. Don't get me wrong, absolutely love Armored Core. I need to go back and finish part 6. However, Titanic Scion, it's on my radar. I think I'm going to be getting that sooner rather than later, because I've really been in a more higher speed, more like fluid kind of action mood than I normally have been in the past. So this game seems to scratch that itch. AMC, was there anything you saw that you liked about Titanic Scion?
I mean, the action did look pretty cool, I'd have to say. Like, definitely, as you mentioned, not my style of game, but just looking at it from the outside in, and just seeing the mech and the movement of the mech, and just, like, it didn't look, because sometimes with these mech games, like, it can be a little too chaotic if it's, like, with the faster-paced mech ones. And it's just, like, bullet hell, and you don't know what the hell's going on. You're just getting shot from every angle. But this one, it looked like there's a little more control to the action while also keeping up, like, that fast pace that people who like certain types of mech games can still get out of it. And so it did give room for what looked like to be a great combat system for a mech game that did look like somewhat under control, as opposed to just pure chaos of just mechs fighting it out there. And as you said, jetting back and forth and shooting everybody and shooting each other up and slicing, you know, it's just sometimes it's a little too chaotic, but this one did look pretty cool. Didn't like the aesthetic of it, but yeah, not for me necessarily. I can't wait to hear what you think about it.
When do you think it's coming out, AMC?
No clue. You said it's coming. It looks like it's coming out soon, right?
Yeah, I thought it was coming out in the first couple of weeks of September, but actually it's coming out in that first week. It's coming out September.
Oh, my gosh. So, shall see.
Titanic Scion, Kronos the New Dawn, Hollow Knight Silk Song, Hell is Us, same day. Is A-Dub about to spend $300 on games in one day?
Pick your poison. Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, I'm hoping for some $40 and $50 prices in that mix, because if they all 70, I don't know. But yeah, AFC, what's next on the list?
A game that I I'm just mentioning games that I'm not even sure if I'm going to even play, but games that caught my eye. This one being Silent Hill F. We got that little bit of preview. Only thing I'll get into here is seeing some of that combat, because a little, I felt like I had seen a lot more of the tone of the game, and that's where you kind of lose me when I saw that combat, and it was heavy. Like, those shots were heavy from a character that's not a big character, like pretty slight in stature, but yeah, like shot like doom. Don't like heavy hits. I was enjoying that, and actually, I pulled up an article from Games Radar, and I guess some of the reaction to it, and I guess they got an interview with the people that worked on Silent Hill to kind of clarify some things about the combat. And so I'll just read the article, or like bits and pieces of the article. So I'll start with here. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't worried to discover in our Silent Hill F preview that the first mainline Silent Hill game in years features parry-heavy combat. That's a little too parry god. Every game you got to parry. That's a little too worldly and Souls-like for my favorite small-town franchise. Everything's a Souls-like now, A-Dub. But here we go. But there's a caveat. But speaking to Games Radar at Gamescom Day One, Silent Hill producer Motoi Akimoto and director the homie Al Yang have blessedly cooled me down by instructing us to play Silent Hill F in story mode. Interesting. Okay, so this is only reason why I guess this person is okay is because they recommended story mode. So let's get into this. Here, let's hear their
Oh, you
breakdown.
mean the lowest difficulty? If you want to be scared but not have to engage with the combat system.
If you don't want to get good.
Oh, God.
So here we go. What we like to emphasize is that the core experience of this game leans heavily on the script of the game, which has been handled by Akimoto, whatever. And so in order it says it was just handled by Ryukishi07. And so in order to have the most authentic Silent Hill experience you can, we highly recommend that everyone just try it out on the story mode difficulty. So maybe they're just getting ahead of the difficulty haters, after seeing how people have reacted to some other Souls likes and like the get good crowd. They said, hey, we got a story mode for you, so shut the fuck up. But here's more. We see a lot of people try. So this is what I really want to talk about. We see a lot of people trying to refer to Silent Hill F as a Souls-like, which we disagree with. Once you have a stamina, you have a dodge. People are like, ah, that's a Souls-like. That's a Souls-like. But honestly, we went back to a look that a lot of classic Silent Hill titles to basically try to replicate that kind of classic experience in combat while refreshing some details to make Silent Hill F more of a true action horror title. You'll see in Silent Hill 4, there's a charge meter in there, and it served the same purpose. And basically, they go on to say it still has all the same atmosphere that you would enjoy Silent Hill F. So basically, they were saying that for people who are worried about seeing the combat, jump into that story mode and don't complain about the combat. But for the people who are worried that it was a lot like a Souls-like, they're saying that no, it still leans heavily on what the game was in the past while also, I guess, modernizing it. So maybe that's where the Souls influence may be coming in, but it's still plays very much like Silent Hill, which I didn't know it had like melee. Like, I thought, like, I assume when I see a horror game that everything's like Resident Evil and you get like a gun with two bullets and then you're running and that's
The
the game's
idea
out.
is to not touch the enemies.
Yeah, but when I saw the combat and it was just heavy attacks, like in that little bit of the trailer, I was like, oh shit, like I'm kind of liking what I see here. So, hey, Dub, hearing what you hear here, that there might be some parrying, that there might be not a lean, but there's going to be some melee combat that might take a little bit of skill to enjoy. I guess, does that build your hype any more about Silent Hill F? I know you're kind of already anticipating this game, but yeah, what are your thoughts about the combat and if it should be true and not lean into the Souls-like future that has been set up for us?
I mean, I don't understand where Souls like is even coming from in this. Like, the game just has a decent combat system, and that shouldn't be a crime in the gaming industry. Like you guys, it's a lot more frightening in a game when you can fight back, but the odds are just insurmountable. Like, it's not a combat system where, oh, you're just gonna be just parrying and backstabbing enemies like it's still Silent Hill. I imagine like that stamina gauge or that charge gauge is going to be a persistent horror of its own in that game, because I imagine it's going to be low quite a bit. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I've been out of the Silent Hill space. All I know is that it's very necessary for these games to have some kind of combat system. I'd vastly prefer them to choose a combat system or combat mechanics that have been proven to work and that have been proven to provide the most like intimate in your face combat experience. I mean, for all the poo-pooing people put on Souls games, what no one can say that they don't do is properly capture the feeling of fighting something face to face, tooth and nail for your life. And that's what you want in a horror game. So I'm extremely hyped. I really don't care like how they like what combat system or whatnot that they put in the game, as long as it's authentic to the experience and enhances it rather than take away or make some kind of disassociative kind of relationship where you are the parry god, but you're in a horror game, you're a little girl. So that won't match up too good. I'm sure that the developers of this game know that, and we should give them the benefit of the doubt, see what they put together, and see how much of the system that we can take for our personal taste and how much we can leave to that same end. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I actually enjoy the thought of that you can kind of handle your business in melee. Like, the one thing that always kind of deters me with survival horror games is the fact that you're constantly overpowered and you're basically just trying to survive. And knowing that if you learn the melee, that one, you can handle yourself better, but it gives you a better chance in the game. I actually kind of like that, because it at least gives you the idea that you might be able to handle your business at points in this game, as opposed to, get off a couple shots and then run into the next room and hope they don't find you or some other shit. And so I do like that you will be able to fight back. And as I said, like, those hits looked hard, they looked heavy, and it was kind of pulling me in. I was like, oh shit, like, all right, this game might have like dope combat. I'm kind of feeling it. Like, that's something that always, I guess, kept my interest about Dead Space when I don't normally have interest in survival horror games. Is in Dead Space, it's there is a, like, you can handle yourself with the gunplay, but you just got to know like where to place the shots and things like that. And so it is a survival horror, but I always felt like in Dead Space, it's like, if you know what you're doing, you can kind of handle business in that game. It's just there's going to be jump scares and things like that. And with this game, it's giving me that hope, like, oh, if I become a parry god, I might be handling business in this game, and it's not as much of an overmatched situation at all times, as you're just trying to push the story forward. And yeah, so that does keep my interest a little more in Silent Hill F, if anything. And yeah, I guess good that they put in the story mode, knowing that there might be some of this backlash to the combat, but then the people who want to enjoy the combat can have that option as well. So I guess I do give them credit for giving the options to the people, and still saying that ultimately story is king when it comes to Silent Hill games. So don't feel bad if you choose to go through the story mode. But there is this whole other system in place that you can engage with and get a more visceral feel for the game outside of just pushing through the story and seeing how the character progresses and all that nonsense. So yeah, I'm all for it. I liked what I saw, and every time I see this game, I like what I'm seeing and what it has to offer. So not bad at all for what Konami has offered with Silent Hill F. Do you have anything else, A-Dub, that caught your eye?
Well, before what caught my eye, I just have one more question about Silent Hill F. Like, has anybody watched a horror movie? Really? Watched a horror movie? Whenever it comes to the main characters, whenever they get close enough to any kind of threat, whenever they're fighting face to face, they're not getting stabbed up and cut up unless they're about to die, but But the main character is usually deflecting attacks, rolling out of the way, knocking stuff down, creating obstacles, but ultimately just not being hit. Whereas everybody else has a really bad habit of getting hit, and that's why they die in these things. So it's just more substance to the idea that we're being upset about the wrong things here. And insofar as a combat system in a survival horror game that involves parrying, you shouldn't be upset about that at all. That's what you want, because that helps enhance the horror.
Some of the biggest games of the year got parrying. Whether it's I forgot the name of the game I was about to say. The RPG game.
Clair Obscur.
Yeah, that.
Which brings the whole combat system to life.
Yeah, you're talking about Wuxing and that melee system and parrying. You sent me videos of you parry got in some of the bosses.
Parrying, dodging feels super fluid, responsive, and it's exactly like it moves at the speed of your thought and reactions.
Those are some of the strengths of those games. Like, it's not just, hey, I'm going to throw up my defense and then I'm going to hit him in between animations. It's like, now I'm going to break up his animation and get off my animations. And so, yeah, it's another way to look at it, as opposed to just countering, taking the big hit counter or dodging. Like, you have another means of, I guess, countering attacks, as opposed to just being purely on the defensive. So I like that.
Yeah, like, do we want survival horror where our only options are to run or to shoot? What are we doing? Like, come on now. It's the scariest thing you could possibly do in a horror situation is have to face the fear of physically engaging with that horror and overcoming it. Like, I don't know. I got high hopes for Silent Hill F. I think these criticisms specifically won't meet out once reviews start coming. But who knows? I could be wrong. We'll see. Feel free to write in and tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong. But insofar as other things that caught my eye, I don't believe we either got to watch these together or at all. It might have been in the pre-show. But one particular game that I saw a very lengthy stream from your boy Fighting Cowboy, he was playing it, is Valor Mortis. So what this game is, it's from the developers or the creators of Ghost Runner, and it's a first person souls like, oh my god. It takes place in the Napoleonic Wars, and you play a French soldier brought back from death on the battlefield to take on twisted monsters. And the hook here is that, yeah, it's a first person souls like. It's got that European twist to it. And I'm watching your man Fighting Cowboy playing it. And like, it's, you're parrying, you got a gun. So it's got kind of a Bloodborne thing going on there. But like, you're really cutting these dudes up. You're opening them up you're blocking their moves, opening up for an attack. It has a whole posture meter, posture break system. And then once you really get in them, you're just skewering them. You're cutting off limbs, heads, cutting torsos in twain. It's something. It's something to see. And it looks like it is a very, very visceral kind of like a rich kind of feedback to it. So I'm very interested in seeing more of this. I like that it's an original concept being added to the genre. Reminds me a bit of what I think Spiders was trying to do with the Greedfall franchise, where they had the colonial guys coming in and invading the native territory, but it's like an RPG. So this, it looks awesome. It looks like it plays very well. I'm looking forward to seeing more. I'm hoping that it's on consoles. It's great. I don't know if you have any information up that you could possibly look at, or maybe like some screens, but just to get an idea. But that was
the name of this. What was the name of the game again?
It's called Valor Mortis.
Valor Mortis.
So Valor, like the for Valor, you know, and Mortis.
Valor Mortis. All right,
it's pretty cool. Like, I like the whole aesthetic of the French soldiers running around. You know, it has the exploration, it has some traversal in the sense of like there are branches and things that you can swing on to get to different parts of levels. You open it up shortcuts, you open it up chests, you get loot, you get different kinds of weapons, things of that nature. You're upgrading. It has the whole lantern or bonfire, and
ooh,
the whole dropping the currency. system where you get defeated, you got to go beat the enemy that beat you in order to get your currency back. And it looks to be very tough. Fighting Cowboy reached an elite enemy that he was determined to take down instead of going to level up and coming back to get it. And once he got a good handle on the parry system, he was able to decimate that enemy in seconds, whereas it had just been cutting him to shreds instantaneously every time they encountered. So yeah, it's definitely a skill heavy game. It's definitely a parry heavy game. It's definitely very big on the gore and dismemberment, but it looks like it's going to be a good time with an interesting world to explore under, you know, some unique and original circumstances. Like AMC, now that you're getting some eyes on it, what do you think?
It looks dope. It looks like you're fighting like revolutionary times or some shit. I'm already loving like this first person angle. Like you give me a good first person melee, but there is like shooting and stuff. That combat style game, I'm having it. But also, you see at one point, like, so he has the sword in his hand. When you say, you know, he's shooting fire out of the other hand. So you kind of have the dual option of offense, which I do like. That's like something that I guess Avowed had. But yeah, like, so you have the magic option, you also have the gun, and then you have the sword in the other hand. So it seems like there's some stuff, interesting stuff going on there, and I'm liking this overall aesthetic. Yeah, this game looks dope. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah, it immediately stood out to me. It's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to just taking that Souls-like formula to a new perspective and having that 3D control from the first-person perspective, like with aiming shots and things like that. In other Souls-likes, you really have to rely on the lock-on system, but with it being first-person and you having that more refined dual-stick control, I'm excited to see how that plays.
Yeah, especially coming from somebody who, as I said, I played Doom the Dark Ages this year, and as much as I enjoyed it, I was like, all right, I kind of had my feel of what they've been offering of Doom as of late and would like to see them like do something different. Like this seems like a good, I guess, transition from a first person perspective of getting that feel. Like that's kind of the reason why I've been really into Indiana Jones, is like, all right, like that looks like a good first person style of game. You know, it's not really a shooter, but looks like interesting melee combat with first person and things that are happening there. And this game, from a pure combat standpoint, looks super interesting. And I'm liking like the atmosphere that it has with it too. So yeah, I'm definitely keeping an eye on this game, A-Dub.
Anything else caught your eye?
Actually, no. You know, I'm scrolling through this list, and there are a lot of things that look good. Chronos look good. Oh, Batman. You know what, Batman? Let's discuss Batman real quick. Lego Batman. They showed it. It looks like it's just pulling in from all the source material of Batman, mainly the big notable ones being the Nolan universe, mm-hmm. the Nolan verse when it comes to the cinematic Batman movies. And what's great is that it's Lego Batman, but with like the gameplay of the Arkham games.
Yes.
So the combat isn't just, you know, Lego games. It's what I imagine is you're running up and you're just socking up dudes, and then they fall apart because they're Legos. Whereas this one, you have the group combat. You're parrying, you're dodging, you're jumping around. A lot of that. But then it also has the stealth that you enjoyed from the Arkham games. And the open world too. And so it has like a little bit of everything that you enjoy that the previous Batman games offered, but in the form of Lego. So it's going to have that humor, that quirkiness, but it seems like it'll have the gameplay will be there too. Definitely not a game for me, but something that I am going to be looking for, because I'm curious to see how much they actually put into these games, or put into this game, because the Lego games tend to always do well, and they have their fandom, and people have been hungry for a Batman game. So to see this one come out and to see how people receive it, I think is going to be something that I'm going to be curious about. How about yourself, Ada? What did you think when you saw this Lego Batman game?
Legacy of the Dark Knight. It's the same feeling that I get whenever I see a new Lego game. It's like, this looks incredible. It's covering a wide swath of the source material. It's giving you locations. It's giving you mechanics. It's giving you content from across various iterations of Batman throughout, you know, all the representations that he's had over the years. I won't say all because I don't want nobody to quote me, but a lot. Like, it, these Lego games always cover a large amount of content. They always look like they have just fun, engaging gameplay. I think the only Lego game I have under my belt, and by that I mean that I've played it for a few hours, is the Lego Avengers, or like Marvel Super Heroes, whichever one came out. It was PS4. And it was a blast to play, but every time I see it, I get the same feeling I always get whenever I see these Lego games. It's just that if it just wasn't Lego, like, these would be hands down, unquestionably, the finest, like, the finest Batman games, the finest Marvel games, the finest Star Wars games, easily. And sure, they are, for people who aren't as sensitive to the Lego aesthetic as I am, and this is coming from a lifelong Lego builder himself, but it's just, I just wish these looked more like the comic books or the cartoons rather than Lego. I do love how over the top they've gotten with their lighting, with their texture work. Like, Batman's cape looks like a real piece of cut, like, nylon fabric that they put in the package with the minifigs. And, you know, you're going to have multiple Batmobiles. You can play as multiple Batmans. I just can't do the Lego thing, man. And it's like, maybe I can do it. I just don't want to do it. I think that's the long and short of it. But I salute everybody who's just excited about this, and all the people who are going to be able to enjoy it from beginning to end. Personally, it won't find its way into my library anytime soon. However, I respect the work. And yeah, I'm hoping it does great things.
All right, anything else catch your eye, Adub?
Anything else catch my eye? Well, I got, just for the love of the game, I got to make a note of this one. We don't have to spend too much time on it. But we got a glimpse of the future of the Warhammer pantheon of games, because Dawn of War 4 was revealed. If you guys have been listening to the show long enough, you'll know that Dawn of War was one of the first PC games that I purchased of my own taste and volition, once I had a decent PC with an okay graphics card that could actually run it right. But yeah, Dawn of War, it changed my life. It was a game that really put the art and the animation first, and then built the game underneath all of that, you know, to the point where it's like, you go from StarCraft and you're just watching these little, like, almost pixelated units moving around in their isometric paths, going to each other, going through their short canned animations until the math determines one or both of them fall. With Dawn of War, like, you're watching your squad move as a unit, get into position, take cover. You're seeing them all shooting at different things, getting hit in. Individually, someone might get picked off, and you gotta reinforce. You gotta see the tank coming in. You gotta choose all the different weapons, your outfit, and your squad to handle the situations. And it's like watching actual warfare, and that was something that stuck with me ever since I played it. I ended up getting the expansion, and I had an absolute blast with it. So I'm definitely building a PC. At some point, I'm trying to find a 5090. So if anybody got any leads, controlissuespod@gmail.com. But Dawn of War 4, like, if I get a decent PC anytime soon, that is totally on my list. It's coming in 2026. AMC, how did you feel when you saw this game?
Yeah, it looked dope. Like, just the sheer amount of action that was happening all at once. I imagine there's just incredible amounts of AI to keep things going, like, in that game, or just, like, processing, because there's no way, like, you could just be clicking all that board and just understanding everything. Like, I almost feel like it's, send them here, let them handle business, and I'll get to them. Yeah. Because
they're not doing too well. Let me help them out a little bit.
Yeah, because, like, you see, like, the enemies are coming in, and then just, like, a drop pod drops on a squad of enemies. Then you see soldiers pouring out of that drop pod to go and attack something else. And while that's happening, there's, like, a Devastator or whatever in the background handling business. Like, it was just, there is so much happening that's the thing that really appealed to me. Was, blastings. Yeah, like, it captured the the full scale of the war effort when it comes to just real-time strategy and mainly Dawn of War or Warhammer when I think about it. Because a lot of times with Warhammer, it's very singularly focused on your squad when you play like other games like Space Marine. But there's it's a whole mm-hmm. big war effort happening. And so to see it all playing out on one screen at one time, like it was, I was in awe of it. Definitely took me back to, you know, just the old days of Dawn of War. And now seeing how with this just upscaling and improvement on in technology to really see how clear the action and the combat is. That's really the biggest thing that caught my attention when it came to Dawn of War, Warhammer, was it number 4?
yes. So, yeah.
And I saw some articles saying that it was true to form, taking you back to whatever the previous Dawn of Wars was. And that's for the diehards, that's all they want to hear is like, it's a return to form. It's going to be great. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm expecting good things when it comes to Dawn of War. You know what? Let's take a break, A-Dub, and then we will continue with our discussion of opening night live. All right, we are back with our extensive review coverage of opening night live. A-Dub, do you have anything else that caught your eye opening night live?
Oh, man, I could look through this list and probably cite some stuff, but you know what? We got some folks.
Yeah.
Where nothing caught their eye. In fact, they give it side eye back to the industry because I don't know. They don't think the show did it quite enough for them. We got Troll of the Week.
Troll of the Week.
Coming sideways at Gamescom, we'll kind of get through this a little quick. They get a little testy, and then they just lose their shit. You'll see the progression as we go through them. First Troll says, nothing presented got me excited, just the same old stuff. I don't know how you can look at all those games and think it's just the same old stuff. But, you know, there are a bunch of sequels. There's a bunch of stuff that we've known about and we've seen already. But then there was some new stuff. There was some cool stuff. Next Troll says, for me personally, that's 2 hours of my life I can't get back. Not an awful show, but not good. Next Troll says, is this your best, Kiwi? Then your best wouldn't do. I'm not going to take it anymore. I don't know what that's suggesting. Maybe somebody needs to investigate that one because that sounds like it's got a threat. It's got a threat rolled up in that piece of ham to make sure the dog takes the pill. But Next Troll takes it to the next level, just says, Slopscom. Next Troll says, looks like I didn't miss much. I refuse to watch any Jeff show. It's a total Sony fan show.
Sony fan show, so much Xbox there, but yeah, I guess.
So exactly. Yeah. So now we're attributing console wars to award shows now. Like, okay. Yeah. I mean, people have always been alleging that Jeff is more favorable to the PlayStation than to the Xbox. But I mean, hey, I saw a lot of Xbox logos on that stage. Indiana Jones on the Switch too. So don't know what to tell you. Next Troll says, what a nothing burger of a show. Unironically, Lego Batman was the best part of it. You like something. It's a start. Next Troll says, garbage. Next, modern gaming is just absolute ass.
Damn. So nothing to ourselves.
Hard carrying retro gamer here. You guys, watch out. Last Troll says, and I quote, can we stop with all the stupid anime games, please?
The waifu central. We got somebody pushing back against the waifus, huh? Oh, finally.
Well, nah, finally. Someone's going to get pushed over a cliff. They coming for the waifu games. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm lining up to purchase these waifu games, but I'm not mad that they exist. In fact, I'm actually kind of glad they do. It's not like the over-sexualized, you know, jiggle physics games trying to pass themselves off as legitimate experiences when they're really just selling you those jiggle physics. So, you know, let's draw a line. Insofar as these trolls, I mean, what the fuck do y'all want, man? They're showing you the stuff that we can look forward to in the near term, mostly in September, a lot of stuff in October as well. And they're showing you stuff that we can look forward to in the years to come, specifically 2026. We got Onimusha in there. Oh my God. Got GTA. That wasn't a part of the show, but it's worth mentioning. And we got all kinds of other stuff. But in the near term, there's a lot to look forward to. Just the first 2 weeks of September alone are more stacked than most years are in the past. So if you can't find anything to play within the survival horror genre, within the strategy genre, within the Warhammer genre, within the action game genre, because Ninja Gaiden was there, within the beat 'em up genre, in the pre-show they had there's a He-Man beat 'em up, AMC, and I need to go back and watch that video to see if the Master of the Universe is holding it down the way the Grayskull needs to be holding it down. There's something for everybody. You want to play Enzoi? Go play that. You want to get your Cult of the Lamb on? You go do that. You want to get your shooting on? You care. Racing games. What do you guys want? Let the industry know so they can give you the things you want instead of telling them that everything they're making is garbage. AMC, you got anything for these trolls?
Nah, I mean, we knew it. We did. We had the opening night live trolls last week, and we knew what they were going to do. Surprised to see that there were some people that at least somebody found something that was good with Lego Batman. Then also surprised to see that there's somebody pushing back against the waifu games. Like I did have that moment where I was like, damn, there are a lot of these games like coming out. But at the same time, it's kind of funny to see somebody push back, because everything up until now has been like, oh, these Western games have taken the pretty out of the games. And so the waifu games were the games that were picking up I guess the horny developers had left off in the Western point in the Western atmosphere. And so yeah, the horny games coming from the East, and we're getting more of them, and I have no problem with it, because it's not what I look for. It's not what I necessarily care about, but I feel like the horny gamers need to be fed. And if they don't get fed, then they start throwing tantrums. And so we have Japan to take care of that. Korea, they're going to also help out with that. Maybe China, but mainly Japan.
China helping.
Yeah. So yeah, the East is holding it down when it comes to, you know, goon material while playing some dope ass video games. And so I have no problem with that. But yeah, it is what it is. People are going to always look at anything that Jeff Keighley has to offer and complain. We finally got a release date for Hollow Knight, Silk Song, and I think that's all anybody really cared about. So you got that. We got to see a little bit of Call of Duty and some of what that's going to have to offer in every iteration of it. So we're going to see how that – we can now start talking about how it's going to stand the battlefield when that heavyweight battle happens in the fall. And so, yeah, I thought it was a great presentation overall. There was a ton to walk away with and think about. And so, yeah, he did the damn thing. I'll give Jeff Keighley his due, even without your boy Kojima showing up and helping him out. So, yeah, I held it down from Germany, and it was a very European-centric show, and it kind of had that feel, and I actually appreciated that about the show. So I have no issues with it myself.
Before we throw the Jeff out with the bathwater, just let me know who's doing it and who's doing it better.
Troll of the week. All right. Do we have any quick hits before we get out of here?
Well, just one that caught my eye and we talked about a little bit, and keeping in the theme with defending Destiny 2, talking about live service and the influence that Bungie as well as Destiny has had on live service as well as first-person shooters, I think it would be pretty important to mention one of the numerous stories that tried to get buried in the celebration that is Gamescom, and that is Pete Parsons is leaving Bungie. So Bungie CEO. Yeah, Bungie CEO.
Let us know Pete what you Parsons think, Greg.
Yeah, please do. Bungie CEO Pete Parsons is departing the company after 23 years and nearly 10 as CEO. He's succeeded by Justin Truman, currently Chief Development Officer and fellow Bungie veteran. I'm not gonna go through what Pete wrote because I think it's just more important that
I'm proud of my
given
work.
the position that
I stand by
this isn't
everything I
what.
did.
I'll give you the last part. Today marks the right time for a new beginning. The future of Bungie will be in the hands of a new generation of leaders, and I'm thrilled to announce that Justin Truman will be stepping into leadership as Bungie's new studio head. So it seems like, Parsons, he's going out on his own terms, onto bigger and better, maybe. But I feel it's important, like with the position that Bungie is in, where they were possibly the largest expenditure that Sony has made in gaming ever, or at least just in this generation alone, and how much we've kind of lost with that acquisition, with Bungie's expertise in live service and, the whole thing with The Last of Us multiplayer that was developed, but they didn't have the resources to support it unless they wanted to dedicate all of Naughty Dog to being behind that game for the time it would need to be supported. We got Marathon and the debacle there with the artwork. There's also the various situations with Bungie with other artwork in Destiny and, the toxic work culture and all that. It just seems like a good time for someone like Parsons to step away. AFC, you have a better nose for these kind of situations and how, all the various straws contribute to the mass that breaks the camel. What's your take on Pete Parsons leaving and how this might affect the future for Bungie?
Yeah, I don't really. It's tough with this situation. What I will say is that often the complaint is the developers are the ones like the line workers, if you will. The developers are the ones who usually take the hit in these situations. Like a game doesn't sell, and it's like we're laying off staff, and people are like, "Hey, what about the leadership?" And then like something else happens, and it's like, "Oh, we gotta get rid of these contract workers." Like, well, what about the leadership? Because they were the ones who were kind of directing things. And I had like kind of gone on a rant like the other week. I can't even remember what it was about, but I was just saying that how leadership, oh yeah, like kind of like how Battlefield has turned around and how a lot of that, it's not like they overhauled their entire development team. It's they brought in a dude who knew what he was doing in what Vincent Pella, and then now people are like, holy shit, Battlefield is kicking ass right now. And yeah, so it's for me, I was just pointing out right there like how important leadership is. It's not to say that everybody's replaceable underneath leadership, but having somebody with a vision and somebody who can galvanize and have everybody on the same page to bring that fruition, bring that vision into reality is I think is extremely important, and it shows up in their compensation a lot of the times. And it's from a creative standpoint, a leader who has a creative vision that is unmatched, kind of like a Kojima, is extremely important. And so when you have a situation like this with Bungie and a lot of criticism, I guess, towards Destiny, and as I said, mainly a lot of the criticism being in the PvP department, and Greg saying that PvE, I guess, still holding it down, who knows? But with Parsons, clearly, there's been a lot of criticism about how the state of Bungie, and even outside, because I've just been focusing mainly on Destiny with Marathon and how that launch, the game literally had to get delayed based on some of the reaction and then the whole stealing of the artwork, the plagiarism part of it. And so there's just a lot going on there where it's, hey, we need to fix things, and what better way to fix things than to start at the leadership? And he didn't, I guess he left on his own, right? Like he didn't get fired, but this seems like
It
a
seems like he's walking away on his own terms. I mean, my next question to you was going to be, do you think that maybe he saw the writing on the wall and
I
decided
mean
to just remove himself from the situation? Or maybe there was a behind the scenes, like, we're
I
not going
wouldn't
to
be
renew.
surprised. Yeah, sorry, what? We're not going to
Yes,
renew
just
your
that whole thing
contract.
where it's just like, we're not going to renew your contract. So, you got a little time to kind of
Yeah,
figure
I mean, I
out
would say
how you're
the
going to walk
biggest.
out those doors for the last time.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing, like going back to what we discussed the other week, is when there was the earnings call for Sony, and like I guess the activist investor was asking about Marathon and what's going on with that, and they're asking about the state of Marathon and Sony's like stance on like Bungie and their view of them, and the CFO is basically like, yeah, like we're gonna remove some of their autonomy, they're gonna slowly get integrated into PlayStation Studios. And for me, I think that might have been the bigger writing on the wall, like, we don't trust your leadership, and so we are gonna bring you into the fold, which means you're gonna lose a little bit of your decision making. And who makes a lot of decisions? Leadership. And so that's kind of a sign that we don't trust your leadership. And I think that, if anything, was the writing on the wall. Like, they're not gonna do the thing where they're, it's not Japan, so they can't just put them in a corner office and let them like
put him in that room and let him get his life together.
Yeah, they can't do that. And so yeah, he just steps away and moves on with his life. So yeah, it seems like people are going to be happy about this, and from where I stand, that some things need to be shaken up at Bungie. So I have no problem with this change, even if he wasn't forced out. It sounds like a Jim Ryan situation. Like, he wasn't asked to leave, but the writing was on the wall, and your boy Todoroki was standing there.
Could this be the start of a new Bungie? Maybe brighter skies, clearer skies, brighter days.
Yeah, we shall see. I mean, we shall see. We got to see how Marathon launches, because no matter what, even if he's gone, Marathon still has to launch with or without him. And so yeah, if Marathon launches in a bad state, people will still be down on Bungie. If it launches in a good state, maybe some people will note this moment as a milestone, as a pivoting point for Bungie to get their shit together. So yeah, that's all I got. Yeah. On that.
I mean, if leadership was the issue, this should be a step in the right direction. So we'll see what becomes of Bungie under tighter Sony leadership.
Do you have any final words, A-Dub? Oh, yeah. That's before we get out of here.
Any final words? Final words. It's like, I think that I'm going to make a bold prediction here. And these are my final words for the show. Bold prediction right now. I think once we reach end of year 2026, we're going to see the entire conversation around not only PlayStation 5, but this current generation of gaming completely flip around. And suddenly people are like, oh, this is one of the best generations ever. Oh, this and that. Oh, it's so good. Better than PS4. Better than PS3. Like, I think, like, it just, it's back to that, the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing. Like, people don't realize the sheer volume of straws that the camel of their trolling, their anger, and their dissatisfaction with everything is supporting right now. Because once those heavy hitters, once that Onimusha, once that Fable, once that Grand Theft Auto 6, like, once those major hits fall on that camel, I think the hatred's going to be busted. Hayden's gonna flip, AMC. But hey, I could be wrong. Let me know what you think. controlissuespod@gmail.com. AMC, any final words?
Yeah, I would say, just jumping off of that point, it reminds me of a fighter and managing rounds of a fight. And it goes to, so I read this book, I think Thinking Fast and Slow. It's a behavioral economics style of book, but it focuses on a lot of cognitive biases. And one of the things it said is there's a rule, a cognitive bias rule called peak end. And it's, you remember the most intense feeling and then the lasting feeling. And the reason why that kind of jogged my memory of that book, going back to the PS3, there's a lot of criticism at the start of the PS3 generation, but people only remember how the generation ended. And that's what carried the momentum into the PS4. And so from what you're saying, like, yeah, if they have a ton of momentum ending the PS5 generation, people aren't going to remember, you know, some of the complaints about like the lack of first party offerings during this live service push in the middle of the generation. And so, yeah, if they get that
experiment.
Yeah. And so if they get that steady cadence and a strong finish, that's all they really need to carry them into the next generation, because that's all people are going to be thinking about is what games they ended the generation with, and then what we could look forward to as far as expanding on those games with the better hardware in the next generation. Peak end rule, read it, learn it, live it, love it. Well, that was Control Issues. I am the AMC.
Thank you.
shoes!